Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how's your soul progress? How's it doing, that old soul of yours? Well, we're going to find out more about soul progress today in this interview with the author of a book called The Angelic Origins of the Soul. That's where to get started, of course. And it's an amazing book. It's another one of her many books, and she's on the show many times. And that's Tricia McCann. Tricia, welcome to Energy Stew.
Oh, Peter, it is always such a pleasure to do an interview with you. I told you you're one of my favorite radio show hosts because you're so clear and you're very deep. And, you know, you don't just float on the surface. You go for the meat of the matter. So,
well, yes, and I only choose the guests who can handle the meat.
Thank you.
Sure. Well, I love interviewing you because your books are monumental. They're so deep. You've done so much homework. It's a gift for all of us to have your books in this world. And so I want you to just briefly give us an overview because there's so much. This is a very fat book and there's so much in it that is so chewy. But how can...
That's so funny. I don't seem to be able to write these like 150, 250 page books. I seem like I'm sort of doomed to write 350 to 450 page books, but it's because we're looking at the whole picture and we're connecting the dots. And I think this is one of the things we need so badly in our society right now. You know, all these different religions that at the exoteric level appear to disagree with one another. So they're to the point of having the crazy holy jihads, you know, whether you're religious right Christians or religious right Muslims or religious right anything. But at the deeper esoteric level, the truth is that all the great sages and masters that inspired these beautiful paths agree with one another. And they're not having any problem and no arguments, because the higher we go in consciousness, the more we actually see and experience the same things. It's just in the exoteric outer world that the dogma and the rules and regulations of maybe people who aren't quite as tuned in or connected to spirit seem to be in conflict with one another.
So there are, you point out in your book, there are stages of soul evolution. And we are on this planet with many different souls of different levels of evolution.
We are, in fact. And in the book, I talk about really the six stages of soul evolution from the very beginners, which I love the beginners because they're so pure. They've come from the heavenly worlds more recently. They're usually high creatives, but they don't have good discernment or survival skills here. So they can get mowed down or manipulated or fall into fear and kind of be frozen. They don't recognize evil, for example, or people that are trying to manipulate them because they themselves are so beautiful and pure. And then we have young souls who are people who have been like, oh my God, you know, I've got it. There's lions and tigers and bears out there. And at any moment I could be attacked. So, you know, man the torpedoes, let's build walls, let's make the rules and regulations and the curfews. So these are good people, but they're more limited and they're fear-based. All the fundamentalists in all the religions of all the worlds are basically good intention people that are in this group. And then you have intermediate souls that have figured out, hey, there's a game going on down here and I want to win it. There's winners, there's losers, there's dog eat dog, and I don't want to be eaten. So no matter who I have to kind of screw over, I'm going to win this game. So they're all about power, and we can see them as rich, powerful, successful, manipulative people. Who are smiling on one hand and doing dirty deeds behind the scenes. And we see this, you know, in our media all the time. Or they can be the petty criminals. But basically, they're creating lots and lots of karma because they're all about service to self and not unity consciousness. Then you have advanced souls, and these are good souls that have figured out, you know what, I'd like to win, but you should win too. So let's have a win-win instead of a win-lose dynamic. And many of them get married, have families, try to fit into society, do the right thing. They don't always do the right thing. They're still working on it. But someplace around 6.25 billion years in age, an advanced soul will become, for the first time, to really be interested in helping world consciousness.
Yeah, the ages... for me are all relative, because when we're in other dimensions, time isn't the same anyway.
Of course, this calibration is based on what we would think of as Earth years.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's out there, they don't even identify with that.
Right, but around towards the end, the last half of being an advanced soul, people get on the big page of, you know, let's help the animals, the oceans, the forest, the planet, let's help the children, let's help each other. And then, you know, the next stage would be the master soul. And of course, it's not like, you know, just poof, add water, instant master. No, it's a process. So, you know, those people, about half of them never marry. They are really mission driven. And it doesn't mean you can't marry, but you can't marry someone that's going to pull you off your mission, or, you know, you'll get turned around in your life and not make progress. And then eventually we have the bodhisattva souls, who are souls that have become completely enlightened. They never really had to come down here, but they've come back because they have great compassion for the masses.
Well, I just want my audience to know that I'm sure they're all bodhisattvas.
Yes, that sounds very hopeful, and certainly if they follow your work, they're probably advanced master bodhisattva souls, you know. And they come in many disguises. You don't have to just be wearing a monk's uniform or clothes or robe to be one of those people. There are many people who have incarnated in this world, the world of action, as the Tree of Life would, you know, refer to it, in the middle of New York City or some other community, in order to make a difference in the world.
Right. And so it's nice to have that overview of, you know, and to appreciate it, because that way we can be very forgiving too, because souls don't know any better.
Yeah, it really, I think, helps to go, oh, you know, they're doing the best they can with where they are in their understanding. And in time, you know, their life experience, maybe several lifetimes in the future, will bring them to the point of opening up. And it does help us to be more compassionate.
Right. And that's advanced thinking, too. So we like that. That's collective thinking. And collective thinking is win-win.
It's a win-win.
Right. So this book is comprehensive. It has different parts to it. Can you explain the different parts?
Yeah, this book has four separate parts. Part one, pretty short, three chapters. What is the soul? What do all the different philosophies and religions say about the soul and the rules that govern it? And that includes Christian, Jewish, Egyptian, Hindu, Muslim, Native American, Buddhist, all the different groups, because they all weigh in. What do the Greek philosophers say? You know, what did the ancient mystery schools say? And that's great, because it really gives us an overview, and we get to see how it all connects. The second part, I love the second part. It's called The Landscapes of Heaven. And in fact, I almost call the book The Landscapes of Heaven, because I so love this part. So it sort of begins, well, hey, what's the proof that we have that the soul exists? Well, that would be NDEs, near-death experiences. And many of the people, you know, who've died, they didn't even have a religious belief system. Some of them were atheist. But yet, they find themselves going through the same experience, many times going through that dark tunnel, meeting a being of light, seeing an incredible life review. Some, you know, having to then come back. Others getting to go into the landscapes of heaven, getting to see these incredible paradisical realms where there's light coming from every blade of grass, every animal, crystal cities, temples that literally are resonant with sound and literally knowledge streaming out of them vibrationally, meeting guides and masters and angels. And so I tell a lot of these stories, literally sharing this peek behind the cosmic curtain, so to speak. And I love this section of the book because I myself have had my own near-death experience, and I know how that's a game changer for so many of us.
Right.
The third section is really, okay, how did it all begin? You know, if you were God, the one and only for all eternity, what would you do? If, you know, you got a lot of time on your hands, eternity, in fact. So it's how the one split itself in two to become the divine father and mother, and how this creates the shape of the Visakha Pisces, which of course becomes the window of the soul, the shape of the eyes, the shape of seeds, the shape of the yoni where the child comes out, the shape of the at the end of a man's phallus where the seed of life comes out. So we talk about how this was also intrinsic to Jesus's teachings. You know, when you make the two eyes into one, the inner into the outer into the inner, the female into the male, then you shall see the kingdom of heaven. And so that's, of course, the third eye that pulls back the veils. So this is talks about the nine orders of the angels from which we all emerge. It talks about how we fall into separation and the illusion that we're separate from God. And it talks about the six stages of soul evolution. And finally, the fourth section really talks about the ways that we can get bound up down here and trapped in the illusionary world, where we believe that we're unworthy, we believe we've been abandoned or betrayed, we believe we're all alone down here, and how the ego that's meant to actually help us survive down here for a period of time can actually begin to really believe in these illusionary things to the point that it uses things like self-righteousness and denial to basically keep us from getting in touch with our own soul essence and realizing that that same sacred divine light dwells in every other creature. As they say in the ancient world, it sleeps in the stones, it feels in the animals, it thinks in, or it feels in the plants, it thinks in the animals, and we have a chance to become self-reflective and self-enlightened as human beings. And so, and there's also a course, like a quiz you can take in the fourth section that's sort of like, where are you in what you've learned? And there's a whole scale of, I'm just starting to learn this, to all the way to where I'm in full crisis, to where, you know, I think I got it, to where, check, I've got mastery about this. And so you can sort of take that quiz yourself to sort of see how you're doing in your life lessons.
There's a great checklist that I saw, and it was wonderful.
Did you like that?
Yeah, I didn't have the time to go through it because it's such a big book to finish that I wanted to get it done. But I'm going to go back and play with that. The thing is that what I want to talk about with you is, why do we have to go beyond the second chapter? You know, in other words, if it's all light and love out there, it's such a blissful other dimensionality out there. Why don't we just spend all our time there? And, you know, so then we come to the purpose, and you know, what's our divine purpose? Why do we put ourselves through the third and fourth parts of your book? And really, you know, it's so important to understand why we can't just have all, you know, love and light and bliss, because we need to make progress. We need to get back to unity from duality. And so it's nice to have some escapes, but this is, you know, this is where the work is done in these later chapters of your book, to really handle the purpose of overcoming duality, overcoming darkness, bringing light. The more we can bring light, the more we evolve and refine the universe and become one again.
We do indeed. And you said it really beautifully right before our interview started, where you're like, this book is about starting as the one, becoming the many, and then eventually returning to the one, but with self-knowledge. And I think that, you know, this is something we can ponder at a deep level, and there's so many ways to respond to that question. First off, we could say at one level, it's the way that we entertain ourselves throughout eternity. I mean, if we're just up there on a cloud with a harp, you know, which is that picture for eternity, even, you know, it's like eating hot fudge chocolate sundaes or playing a harp on a cloud becomes boring after a while. So, you know, just like we want to go to the amusement park or Six Flags or Walt Disney World, we hear there's a great roller coaster ride, an amazing Ferris wheel, a haunted house. So we choose to extend a portion of ourselves down here in the lower worlds where the whole spectrum of contrast exists. And if we did not have the light and the dark, you know, what would be the point of free will? Free will is about making the deliberate decision to instead of go away from the source of your own being, which is, of course, that God spark within you, but go towards embracing that God spark and loving yourself in the process, even with all your human flaws. And of course, we've all got them as long as we're down here in the mortal world. But at another level, there's a part of us, that angelic twin that I talk about, that the Gnostics talked about, the Essenes talked about, the Tibetan Book of the Dead talks about, that is this divine light being that never actually descends. It just sends a portion of itself into the third or the fourth dimension to go through the roller coaster ride of sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all the crazy things we encounter down here.
The part of us that we come from and represent it in the lessons that we learn and accumulate through many lifetimes, they keep getting added to that higher self and become wiser and wiser.
That's exactly right. And that's how we really attain mastery over time. In each life, you know, we have certain, let us say, sub-personalities that we have to actually begin to harmonize. You know, the warrior with the lover, the ascetic with the, hedonist, the one who wants to make money to the one that wants to go meditate in the Buddhist monastery. You know, we have a lot of different parts of ourselves, and we must find ways to make peace with all of them and to heal the ones that died in trauma, and to allow ourselves then to realize that we are really the soul. You know, it's like all these subpersonalities we've created in all these lifetimes, but the soul itself is the wisest one, the one that can bring that healing and that harmony together. And this is why I've done over 6,000, you know, soul readings for people around the world. It's why I'm a trained hypnotherapist, trained in about 10 different healing techniques, so that I can help people release a lot of these subconscious traumas or fears or beliefs or phobias or vows that they've taken that could have been perfect in the life that they were in. Vows perhaps of poverty, chastity, or obedience. But now in this lifetime, it's not appropriate anymore. And in order to be able to direct our lives the way the soul intended and to heal the past, so that we collect our energy to move forward into the present and the future, you know, it's really important to do that emotional healing work.
Right, and very important. I'm even tonight, I'm doing a class on understanding our other dimensional relationships and where we fit in out there in coming here, because we are in soul groups and we have soul purposes. And I, you know, what I love about so much of what you do is to help people find their way at that soul level, not the way, let's say, the ego way, but really understand the longer journey of our souls and how we're aligning with that, rather than, you know, maybe the short journey of our, perhaps our immediate family, which fits into that, but it's only part of the picture.
I think it's really critical. I think of it as the eagle's view. You know, it's like if you're down in the forest, you can't figure out where the path is, or you go to that path and then this path, and then you're worn out by the end of the day. But if you could be an eagle and fly over the forest, you could clearly see where it begins, where it ends, and the path that's the clear path through. So by looking at it from the soul's perspective, we begin to understand why we may have incarnated in challenging circumstances. It's not about being punished. It's really important that we get that. When we're up there at the soul level, we are with our, let us say, higher self, and with our lords of karma or our spirit guides. They help us very clearly see what's the next move we need to make. So maybe, you know, you need to work on your forgiveness, in which case, guess what? You get to come down and have a life where there are people to forgive and situations to forgive. You want to work on your courage. So guess what? You get to come down and deal with some pretty scary situations to see if you can kind of pony up and really draw from those deep reserves within your soul. So, you know, it's like that prayer, you know, if you want strength, then guess what? The divine will give you circumstances to develop that strength or that wisdom or that compassion or that love.
I remember a shamanic journey I went on asking for advice on how to deal with struggle. You know, I was in the middle of something that I was very unhappy about, and it was just, all right, I need some advice. So I went on this shamanic journey, and I came across three guides. One was a two men and a woman who was in the middle, and she was very goddess-like. And so I said, well, tell me, what advice do you have for me to handle struggle? And this woman walked up to me and gave me a chest bump. And she said, buck up. And that was the advice.
That's really it. I mean, it's really not like all this stuff is sprung on us. Before we come in, we agree to the parents, no matter how dysfunctional the family, the economic situation, the race that we're born into, and all of us have been probably everything, white, black, brown, oriental. We've been male and female. So the whole idea that one gender has to be dominant over another, or one race has to be dominant, or another race to be judged, is actually kind of cuckoo when you think about it, because really we're souls wearing these bodies, and we just take on these different bodies in different lifetimes to have different experiences.
Well, also we're in a species that is growing as a species, and we're in cultures that are evolving. So culturally, we're at a place now where we really are needing to see the collapse of things, see the exposure of bad things happening that make it more clear how to live more correctly.
Well, really, you know, in the Bible, it talks about how the whole world spoke one language so we could communicate until the whole Tower of Babel. So now that we're finally on the internet and we have all these incredible ways of communicating, we can realize that the people in China are wonderful, marvelous people who are kind and loving, who want the same things we do, the same thing in India, the same thing in Russia. Now, maybe the governments are still arguing about money, power, oil, control, and they've got problems, but the people themselves, at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We want to love and be loved. We want to feel safe. We want to have enough adventure to grow. It's that balance between those two extremes, which has to do with, of course, the middle path. And I'm very much a proponent of the middle path, because it's the path that Buddha taught, the path that Jesus taught, the path that Thoth taught. It's really the way of integration, where we bring the two extremes back into wholeness in the middle.
Right. And I think just to understand that we're in that, to give ourselves room to live in the truth of the struggles that we're in, and be much more persevering in tackling them,
and have a sense of humor. And,
right, but not go into those PVRs that you talk about in the book, the, you know, victims and
yeah, the PVR triangle, which a lot of people don't know about it, but a lot of our society is playing into that, and it's the persecutor, victim, rescuer. And it, you know, there are a lot of us, probably people listening to this, that actually are the healers of the world, and so they have been the rescuers. And again, if it's in balance, okay, cool. But many of us at different times have felt like a victim, and if we get angry and really start on our rant and rave, any of us can be the persecutor. But there's some people that identify more with being the tyrant or the persecutor, and that's their normal MO, which of course is not going to really make them happy or anybody around them. There are other people that seem very committed to being the victim and never really claiming their power and standing up for themselves, instead, you know, kind of sucking all the energy out of the room with their victimhood. And then there are other people that always are running to the rescue, and then of course they're trying to help others can wind up backfiring on them, because then the victim can take out their anger on the rescuer, so that the rescuer becomes the victim, and then the victim becomes the persecutor, and then the victim feels so bad, then they become the rescuer. You can sort of see.
But there's so much in your book that so many different areas that you talk about that handle this, and so I think, you know, it's so comprehensive.
It's worth reading, because it really gives you the keys.
Yeah, there's so much in it, and it's very entertaining. You know, you do such a great job. You're a great writer, so it's easy reading. It's fun reading, and it is, every page is another aha.
Well, you get to see a lot of your friends and even yourself and your family in it. It's like, I didn't realize I had that one. Okay. And so it's like a systems busters, you know?
Right.
And of course, I've like a lot of us, I've grown up in dysfunctional families and environments. And so, you know, I got to experience a lot of these firsthand myself. So it's not like, you know, I'm just sitting on the bench. I mean, I really have been right in the trenches with everybody else out there.
Right. So that the point is, well, we need to have a bigger picture. This is the bigger picture. And for us, it's an opportunity. So everybody really should digest this book to know themselves at that angelic soul level and appreciate that they can be that and living a difficult life.
You know, I'm really hoping next year in 2018, I really would like to develop an online class to help people go to an even further level about helping them discover what their purpose is. So there's sort of the outer purpose, like I'll be a fireman or a policeman or, you know, a military person or a radio host or a writer or teacher or mother. And then there's the inner. And so this book is addressing a lot of the inner so that we acknowledge ourselves for the work that we actually have been doing in our life. But I'd also like to be able to develop an online course in 2018 that people can take for themselves that will help them to get clear about honoring their own process and mastery, and then maybe finding the best way for them to express it in the physical world.
Right, that's great. They can learn their Chiron wounds and become the wounded healer.
Yeah, the wounded healer that becomes the master healer.
Exactly. That's wonderful. Tricia McCannon, it's always so great to talk with you. I love what you do. You probably have another book in the works at this point, or at least you know, on the drawing board. You have some, what are other books of yours, just quickly?
My very first book was called Dialogues with the Angels, and that's a great story. You can kind of only get that from Amazon or from my website, Tricia McCannon Speaks. And that kind of starts off, because I've always been a clairvoyant, clairaudient, where I literally was communicating with angels at the age of 8 in this great forest. And within 3 chapters, you're with the Viragi masters who literally initiated me and taught me the ancient science of soul travel.
We're running out of time, so I would love to have an analysis of all of your books, and I've certainly read almost, I think, maybe all of them.
Well, I'll do it a little quicker. You know, my second book was about Jesus. My third was about the return of the divine Sophia, the divine feminine. And this is my fourth book in print, although I do have 13 online books under the mystery schools that people can take. They can just go to my website and look under mysteries and, you know, you'll get to see those classes.
So. TriciaMcCannonSpeaks.com, right?
Yes, exactly, Peter. Thank you so much for having me.
It's
always a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm so happy to talk with you and have you on Energy Stew. You're such a wonderful guest.
And I'm hoping that you're going to write your book next year.
I'm
looking forward to that.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.